And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. Happy, what is today? Tuesday night to everyone. Hope you are well and rested after a busy few days here about the NFL draft. The Commanders, of course, made seven picks, starting with cornerback Emmanuel Forbes. They've added some undrafted free agents as well. I wrote about that on The Athletic. It'll be up on Wednesday. I'll talk a little bit about that now in a moment. But that is not the highlight of this episode. We've got a deep, deep dive into everything the Commanders just did in this draft, things they didn't do, and what it means for the roster going forward with the man, the myth, the legend, Logan Paulson joins me. We talk for about an hour, I'd say, on all these things. A really interesting conversation. We talked, you know, obviously, about what he thought about certain picks. We talked about, I mentioned my take on, or frustration, I should say, with position flex, all that talk. We'll get Logan's view on that. And we got into a bunch more, including one of the undrafted free agents that Logan knows for sure. So we'll get to that in a moment here on the podcast, which, of course, you can find on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you do your podcasting. And, of course, if you're not already an Athletic subscriber, it would be awesome if you were. I would recommend it. All right, just a couple quick things here. We're waiting, of course, on some news regarding the ownership sale. And I think we're going to get some quasi-incremental updates for a bit, but I still don't think we're going to get any real resolution here for another, I don't even want to specify like a time because I don't want to say a week or two and then, you know, 2 weeks go by and nothing happens. But I don't think we're getting anything resolution today or tomorrow or this week or anything along those lines. But, you know, I would imagine we'll start hearing some more details about what's to come. And I still, to me, the big hang up for me is going to be that indemnification that Dan Snyder is looking for with regards to the various legal and financial matters that are hanging out there, including the Mary Jo White report. I don't know how the league will react to that if Dan Snyder digs in his heels, but we will we'll wait and see on that. As far as the football team goes, I know we're hitting the secondary wave of free agency here at post-draft. I have, you know, there's, I wouldn't even say I hear rumblings about anything they are likely to do. I think for me, the key will be, what do they do in terms of the players on their own team? I think, like, Andrew Norwell, I think it's just a matter of time before he is released. I think Chase Rouye is a little more complicated. Possibly there's a salary reduction versus getting outright released. But when you look at, they just drafted a center, spent money on Nick Gates, re-signed Tyler Larson. I don't know where the room is for Rouye. So I think when those things come into play, we may then get a better feel for what they could possibly add in free agency. But at the moment, I don't have any sense that like there's a big name coming here or anything along those lines. I'd be happy to be surprised. If you ask me where do I think somebody would come in, I'll be curious to see. Similar to what happened a couple of years ago with Charles Leno, is there an interior offensive lineman that's out there that is released, I should say, that they find interesting enough to want to sign? Because to me, the left guard spot, and Logan and I will talk about this, that's the one spot where I really have no feel that who could be the starter. I mean, we know the names, but not like it's all a big uncertainty or big risk going with any of these names in particular. So we will see how that unfolds. As for the undrafted free agents, look, you know, It's always fun to see which of these guys will be somebody to pay attention to. There is a dozen that Washington announced that they have come to terms with. Now, in terms of until they sign their contracts, which would take place presumably when they show up for rookie minicamp, nothing is official in the undrafted free agent market is the wild, wild west. But that said, they've got 12 names. I'll just be honest. I asked some scouts that I've dealt with in the past for their view. Both were kind of gave me some shrugs, a shrug emoji more or less about the whole group. Nothing that particularly exciting, but I will highlight two players in particular. You can go read the story I have where I ranked the players in some way. You can go check that out. But two players I think that stand out to me. One is offensive lineman. Couldn't find his name here. Offensive lineman Mason Brooks, tackle from Mississippi. Now, part of my guess as to why do I think certain players are more interesting than others, has to do with how much interest were they getting from other teams. Washington gave Brooks a $35,000 signing bonus, which is something. A lot of these guys don't get really much of anything. That was a notable number, and I think that was in part because what I was told is at least five teams ranked him very high on their sort of undrafted free agent board. So who is Mason Brooks? He played tackle at Mississippi last year, but really didn't play that much. What got him attention was what he did before he transferred to Mississippi when he played at Western Kentucky. See, 6'5", 302, had a good enough year at Western Kentucky that when he came into the SEC, mind you, Phil Steele, a noted college football insider, writer, his previews are always, things that people will read. He had Brooks on the fourth team All-SEC, which, again, fourth team, down there. But for a guy coming into the league, into the conference, that's a pretty good scenario. Any event, he did not end up playing a lot at Mississippi. And so he really fell off the board until during the post-draft scenario. He had some impressive performances at the Hula Bowl and the East-West Shrine Bowl. Teams reminded themselves to take a look. And, went undrafted, sure, but he became a priority free agent. So, I don't know about making the 53, but I think he's one to keep an eye on for sure. The second one I'll give you, not the quarterback. You may have heard about Tim DeMorat from Fordham. Not him, but he's an interesting one for sure. Let's go with Kazmir Allen, wide receiver, running back, and maybe most importantly for many of you, a returner. Allen had a ridiculous high school career. He played in California. He set the state record for total touchdowns with 72. But just to be clear, that's in one season. One season. I don't even understand how that's possible. In any event, he went to UCLA, had a lot of hype. Not only is he a good football player, but he ran track, so he's got that kind of speed. It just never really worked out for him. Somebody thought that maybe Chip Kelly, the UCLA coach, has never quite figured out how to use him. He had a better year this season, and from a returner perspective, he averaged 27 yards a kick during his last 2 years. Now, is that enough to say, well, he may be a better returner than Dax Milne? Does that put him on the roster? Not necessarily. He's 5'8". He did run a 4.44, which is good, but it's not incredibly blinding relative to NFL speedsters. And, they're going to have to figure out, can he do anything beyond returning kicks? If they have to use him at receiver, the way Washington did at times with Milne, is there something there? That will have to be seen. But I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to see what he can do. And in terms of position, our guy Dane Brugler listed him as a wide receiver. The Commanders did as well. But I know Todd McShay listed him as a running back, and he did have carries, about 68 carries during his career. So could be interesting to see how he's used, especially in light of the fact that, J.D. McKissic is gone, and could he be a sort of swing option there? Position flex. We know how much The man in charge likes that. All right, but you can go check out the rest of the undrafted free agents and get more details on these two guys I just mentioned on The Athletic Wednesday morning. And, you know, look, if you haven't already seen, I have a depth chart story up on The Athletic, plus, you know, various articles wrapping up all things draft for the Commander. So make sure you go check that out. All right, Logan Paulson was with me. We went long. We talked about everything, all the draft picks, and a lot of what and how the draft picks affect the roster. So let's get to it right now. Myself, oh, and I should mention Logan Paulson. Go follow him on Instagram at Logan_Paulson82, and of course check him out on the Commander site where he does a ton of fun work with Fred Smoot. So let's get to it. My conversation with Logan Paulson here on the Standard Groom Only podcast. All right. Joining us here on the podcast to break down what the Commanders did in the draft and kind of where the roster is at this point is none other than the great Logan Paulson. Hours of sleep you got during over the past 3 or 4 days in between the late nights and breaking down tape the way that I know you had did. It was like over 4 hours per night.
It was close to 4 hours. I think maybe five, you know, I got kids too, so I got up early in the morning, but yeah, I had a couple, you know, 2 a.m. kind of nights. And like, as you know, like, you know, the pressers aren't done till late there at the park. So late nights, but, you know, just for a couple of days. So we can always survive a couple of days of not a lot of sleep. So.
Yeah. I'm a historic night owl and not much sleep and all that stuff, but you know, getting a little older and, it's been a while since it's like back to back to back. You know, I always feel like I have to caveat. I'm not complaining, but I'm just saying, like, I was at the park first two nights at least past 1 a.m. because I was writing and transcribing and all that stuff. So, yeah, it's a grind, and I'm not even breaking down tape the way that you are. But the draft is always a blast. And such a weird year this year. How many guys – I'm curious, like, to me this was a much more of an eye of the beholder draft.
Yeah.
Than in other years. No, I mean, even starting at the very top of the draft, not much consensus with what was going to happen. So, like, how many guys did you ultimately end up studying, and how much, as you're watching it, thinking, like, wow, this is really how I thought I had this guy? And other ones, you're like, wow, that's kind of surprising where a guy went.
Yeah, I mean, I watched more guys than I did this than I usually do, just because I had access to, like, I started my process a little bit earlier. Like, I started at the Senior Bowl watching all those guys, and I started watching combine guys. And so I probably ended up watching probably like 130, 150 guys, you know, and it was tough. It's just a tough year for watching film, because like usually you kind of flip the tape on and there's like an obvious, like, kind of something catches your eye and you're like, oh, this guy's got it. But there was a lot of kind of like, especially, you know, with some guys that Washington drafted, you're like, I don't necessarily see this or whatever. And I'm just kind of fleshing out those evaluations. Just took a little bit more time than normal. And I had a lot of conversations with people around the NFL, which kind of hashed that out even more, where you call one of your buddies and he's like, this is my number one tackle, this is my number one receiver. And then you call your next buddy and he's like, oh, he's like the sixth guy on my list or the seventh guy on my list. So there was, it really was kind of like the flavor you were looking for. And that's a little unusual, you know. There's a little bit of that every year, but I felt like this year it was kind of especially so.
Yeah, and I asked Ron Rivera about that after day three, and he said as much as well, that it was harder to get any sort of vibe, feeling of consensus. And obviously, look, any year you're gonna have some outlier opinions, and look at last year, right? The first, you know, Jahan Dotson, Fedarian Mathis, Brian Robinson, all were picked half round or a round higher than sort of the consensus big board, public big boards, which doesn't mean that they're right. And based on last year, it looks like those guys, well, at least the two that played, look to be pretty good picks. So that said, let's just jump into this at the 16th pick. Obviously they take Emmanuel Forbes.
Yeah.
Going into it, when you were, you know, your hopes and dreams, depending on who was on the board, did you want them to go? We kind of knew cornerback and offensive line were their two big needs, with tackle being the position you would take at 16. Were you kind of rooting for a tackle or a cornerback there, whether because you like some guy or you just recognize how the board was shaping out overall? What was your want at that spot?
I think I'd probably would have gone I think I was probably rooting for tackle, but just the way the board fell, you know, like, so just for an example, like in terms of tackle evaluations, like I was really high on Paris Johnson. I was really high on Peter Skoronski, maybe not as a tackle, but I really liked him as a football player. And then I kind of felt like you fell into this next tier of guys. And, you know, Broderick Jones, I know everyone was pretty high on him, but I felt like the team wouldn't be high on him. And I haven't, this is just my opinion of what they value. Only 19 starts, not a lot of position flexibility. So I didn't think the team would be super in on him. I thought there was some technical issues to his game. You know, Anton Harrison, I liked a ton and was like, I was very high on, but, you know, kind of struggled as a run blocker. And I felt like this team wanted to establish an identity. So when you kind of weed through that process, you're like, well, it's Darnell Wright at this spot. And obviously Darnell Wright went 10 or 9 to Chicago. 10, I think, because they traded with Philly. So, you know, when he was off the board, I was kind of like, you know, like it's probably not going to be an offensive lineman at 16. So that leaves cornerback. And then you kind of fall into your cornerback evaluations. And, you know, it is kind of an interesting group because outside of Witherspoon, there was kind of a beauty is in the eye of the beholder situation. Obviously, Christian Gonzalez was kind of like everybody's darling in the offseason because his combine was awesome. But like the film's just okay. I heard his pre-draft process in terms of interviews, in terms of passion for football, came across as kind of middling, which is, you know, that happens every single year. And that's information that I don't have access to all the time. And then, you know, Deonte Banks was a guy that I liked quite a bit. And Emmanuel Forbes was kind of all in that tier. Joey Porter Jr., especially like the last week, like 10 days out, I moved him into the third tier for me, which is kind of like where he ended up going. And I think if you look at those three guys, Banks, Gonzalez, and Forbes, Forbes has by far the best film, and he has the best level of competition. He's the most consistent football player. And I think the only thing that I put Banks ahead of him just barely because I was just worried about the 166. And I know that's kind of a lame reason, but like that's the only concern that I had about it. Like that's in the of all the prospects of all the cornerback process outside of Witherspoon, he was the most surefire thing just based on the film. They play in a system that's approximately the same as what Washington does. They play off zone. They play a little bit of match. They, you know, the level of competition was very, very high. That's very important to this staff. He's a 3-year starter. That's very important to this staff. So he was kind of like the most surefire thing. And I quite frankly, I'm really happy with the pick. And, you know, I think Ron has mentioned this. They wanted to trade back out of that spot. They just couldn't find a dance partner. And so if he's your number one guy, which I'm totally fine with, then you got to pick at 16. And I think they got a really excellent football player.
You mentioned the Gonzalez, what you heard. And I'd heard after the draft, because you're like, hey, okay, this guy was being viewed as like a top, you know, 5, 6, 7 pick in the whole prospect in the whole draft. How are you taking a guy at the same position over him if he's there? But I'd heard sort of the same thing about maybe not having the passion for football that some evaluators were looking for based on the pre-draft meetings. Ironically, of course, Bill Belichick was cool with it. So we'll see how that one.
Well, I think that's interesting because like that's a culture that I think can weed that out pretty quickly, you know? And, you know, he has the traits like Christian Gonzalez. He's like, he looks like when you turn on the film, he's extremely smooth. He's big, he's fast. He's never really out of phase. It never looks hard for him, but, I don't know. Like he just like, you look at the first game last year against Georgia, and he had a really hard time in that game against kind of top flight competition. So I totally think that, you know, Forbes is the right pick there from a film standpoint, from a production standpoint. I mean, obviously the interceptions, I don't love interceptions as a statistic to drive. I think that's kind of a skewed statistic, you know. Sure. I think it's kind of up and down, but like, I think it's an excellent pick. And I think you brought up something really interesting, like this idea of a consensus board or like true value. I think it's unrealistic, right? It's really for the team to decide what they feel is most appropriate and what's the best fit for them. And like, there's so much information, like talking with a couple guys after the draft where they feel a little bit more comfortable talking. And there's so much information comes out about players. You're like, wow, like I never would have taken him, or I would have really moved him down my board if I'd known that before. And teams have that information, you know, for months. So I think it's funny when people are grading drafts and stuff without having a full understanding of what goes into these picks.
And I did a rant on the podcast that I put up this morning. We're talking right now on Monday about draft grades. And look, we all get it. Anybody who's reasonable understands it is a massive projection because we have no idea what's going to happen. So we're grading off of assumptions. And the problem is oftentimes the people who are making those grades are doing it based off of their own assumptions, or if they're not themselves the analyst, what the Dane Brugler's our guy or Mel Kiper's said. Like, for example, Dane Brugler, our guy, had Forbes as his number 35 prospect. Sure. Mel Kiper had him as at 17. So if you're a Mel Kiper person, Washington did great. And if you're a Dane Brugler person, there's a big reach. Also, the draft ranges, I looked at Kiper, McShay, Brugler, Daniel Jeremiah, and PFF. The range on Forbes was between 17 and 35, with the other ones all in the 20s. Here's the thing. They don't have a pick after 16. They didn't pick again until 47.
Right.
So when you talk about reach, it's not like, well, okay, they get to pick again in three picks. No. They didn't. Right. So you either want this guy or you won't see him again at 47. And they did that. So we'll talk more about somebody, one of these guys they drafted who did seem to be picked way earlier. But it's just, you know, when people talk about reach, I think that's a thing to keep an eye on. Also, Forbes was kind of a late bloomer relative to the pre-draft process. Like, sure, Kiper was on him pretty early, but otherwise I didn't hear a ton. And I didn't start talking about him here until about a week ago. When for you did you get a feel that, like, Forbes could be somebody of interest for them, or that maybe he was definitively in this class, or maybe he was for you this whole time, this tier? I mean
I think the first time I watched him, I said I had him kind of, I was high. I mean, he's like, when you watch the film, he's a good football player. So it's literally just like the more you watch him, the more you like him. He's a physical tackler. I think that was something that everyone was like, oh, he's 166. He's not that physical. He's physical with receivers. He's physical at the catch point. He's got great anticipation. He's got great feel in space and zone. So there wasn't a lot to, like, knock him on. I think the only things I was knocking him on was, like, I think he's a little bit too trigger happy. He gets a little bit too aggressive at times, like, which at the NFL can be a little bit of an issue. But then when you talk to the kid, I think it just totally solidifies any evaluation, because you can tell he studies a lot of film. He's grounded. Football is important to him. And I will say that this coaching staff really, really prioritize getting quality human beings in the building. And everyone wants to say, you know, the draft is a science. It's an inexact science, right? And one of the things that I've always kind of leaned towards is you want to draft quality human beings, because quality human beings and people that are passionate about football tend to develop and tend to become better pros. So, you know, when Christian Gonzalez, you know, the rumor is now that he's not that high on football, or you know, he has other interests, or football is one of many things that he's interested in. I know, like, just talking with Emmanuel Forbes, like, that's what that guy bleeds is football. And I think that's so important, because I know that he's going to put the extra work in. He's going to do the extra little stuff, work the footwork after practice to make himself a better professional. And so ultimately, like, when these are all bets, I'm going to bet on that. And a guy with excellent film, a guy with a good physicality, a guy with great starting experience, a guy who's played against top-level competition, played well against top-level competition, and a guy who loves football. And the 166 thing, you know, that maybe not, that's a huge deal. I don't think so based on how he plays. So I'm going to pick that guy over the other guys on the board after all this information has come out, you know. So let
me ask you about the 166, because obviously it is the number one topic with him, and we're all going to be, we're, you know, I think instead of asking, you know, Ron during training camp, how's he practicing, we're going to want to ask what's he eating, you know?
Right.
But let me ask you, as a practical matter, you played tight end. When you're in a situation where you may be going out to block, you may be taking on the cornerback, on a run sweep, or just in general some way. What does it mean? What is an offense going to look at and think, this dude is 166? What are they going to do, if anything, to attack that aspect of it? And this is where I'm just trying to decide, like, how big of a deal is it? Because he is a willing tackler, it looks like, from what I've seen.
Yeah, very willing.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, what was your playing weight?
My weight was 270, 265.
Okay, so I don't know how often the cornerback is going to be taking on the pulling tight end, but nonetheless, or not pulling, but you know what I mean? But that's a 100-pound difference, and even if he's trying to tackle Brian Robinson, that's a 50-pound, 40-pound difference. Right. So what is an opposing offense going to do when they see a 166-pound guy out there?
Well, also, I think the 166 numbers may be a little bit exaggerated. You know, he came in for his interview the day after he was picked. So what was that, Friday? And, you know, he did an interview with Fred Santana and Julie, and Fred in the off time was like, what do you weigh right now? He's like, I weigh 175. And so I do think that he probably lost a bunch of weight for the combine so he could run faster, which is not unprecedented. I think you come in the building and you see him, you stand next to him. He's not a small man because he's, you know, he's got that 6'1", 6'1" and a half height. Yeah. So in terms of weight, I think one of the things I would say is that he's a very technically sound tackler, right? He understands how to do it. He's not taking guys head up. He understands, like, I'm cutting the outside leg of the blocker. I'm cutting the outside leg of the runner. And I will say, like, when you're going to block someone in space, it's not just, hey, let's be two Rams and run into each other full speed. It's there's a little bit of a chess match every single time you go out there. And he's very sudden. And I think the thing that, again, is so important about his game is he's very aware. Like, there's a couple plays on his tape where it's like a screen pass. The blockers are coming out to get him, and the blocker has no chance to touch him because he's triggered so quickly on the screen. He's basically past the blocker before he gets there. So his game, while physicality is an important part of football, there are other ways to overcome a lack of physicality. And I'm not saying he's not physical, because I think he is physical, but he doesn't need to be this, you know, he doesn't need to be Christian Gonzalez when he's taken on a block, because his diagnostic skills are so high. So hopefully that skill set translates to the NFL level and he can still do that. But I also think, like, he does a good job of using his arm length, keeping blockers off of him. He understands when to give ground, when to take ground, when to throw a move, when to rip by a guy. And it all comes back, I think, to his diagnostic process. Like, he in his interview said that, you know, he took the S2 cognition test, and one of the coaches mentioned that he did really well on that test. And that's one of those ones that tests, like, your spatial awareness. And, you know, again, the data on the S2 cognition is slowly coming out. So I'm not going to say, like, because of the S2 cognition test, he's really good at this. But when you watch film, you see he understands space and angles really well, and he diagnoses stuff really quickly. So I think that's going to help him in terms of, you know, his ability to kind of last in the NFL, because he doesn't need to be, like, when you're late, you need to take on blocks. It is basically what I'm saying. When you're late, you got to have a big collision, and he's found a way throughout his career not to do that. I think that's one of the reasons why.
Right. And the fact that he's coming out of the SEC, I mean, not that, yep. Kyle, not that you can't be physical in any level, but the SEC is obviously the best league. He's come out of that, didn't avoid injuries, made All-American teams, did all the things he did. So that shows, like you say, he's got a plan. He's not just going to allow himself to get crushed when going up against these guys. All right, let me ask you this. Now he's on the team, whatever it is, he's here. I remember at the owners meeting, I asked Ron, thinking they might take a cornerback, what is your plan at cornerback if you draft somebody relative to Kendall Fuller? Because Kendall Fuller is, like, the slot corner was the position that they needed to fill. We'll get to the guy maybe who's going to do that. We know that Fuller has played slot in the past. St. Jude's did a little bit last year. Would they look to add a corner to then maybe move Fuller or St. Jude's back inside, or would they prefer to keep those guys where they are? And Rivera seemed to suggest that they would prefer to have Fuller stay where he's been. But Forbes is really an outside corner. He played it almost exclusively there. It doesn't have to be the three corners, but when they're playing together, what's your best guess now as to how they're going to deploy those guys?
You know, I think everyone's been asking me this. And to me,
not an original question. Come on.
Well, no, but I'm saying, like, and you know, I'm sure everyone's been asking you the same thing. Yeah. The short answer is we have no idea. Because, like, when you start doing the math on it, Benjamin St. Juice could move back to nickel, right? And Forbes could move outside. Fuller could stay outside. Danny Johnson can play the nickel, right? Like, there's so many pieces on this defense that could play that spot. Maybe it's a situation, you know, maybe on 3rd and 10, nickel, Fuller plays the nickel and Forbes play. Like, we don't know yet. And I think they don't know yet either. They don't know until they see those guys outside. If I was a betting man, I would say that you're probably going to put Forbes outside. Benjamin St. Juice will probably stay outside and Fuller will move to the nickel. But I also think they've got some really good nickel players, guys that are, you know, a little bit more for the price, probably conducive to that spot. And I think that's something that you got to look at, that this is not only about play in a vacuum. I think it's also about the salary cap hit this year. And I think if you cut Kendall Fuller, I'm not saying they're going to do that, but you save about $8 million in the cap. So I think Kendall's an excellent football player. He's an excellent guy, excellent locker room guy. I think they want him here, but ultimately, like, they're going to, during OTAs, during this offseason, they're going to be making some decisions. And like every year we see this, right, Ben? Every year you go out and watch OTAs or watch training camp and you see them making these decisions and making these assessments. And that's ultimately what's going to happen. So even though Ron said that at the owners' meeting, the situation and dynamic has changed pretty dramatically, I would say. And so now you've got to kind of reassess that. And I think they're just going to continue to reassess until they come up with the best four guys in the back end of this defense.
So, okay, so this is a little tough to ask because of the fact that, like, you're not in the room and you know a lot. You have a lot of information, but you don't have all the information about these guys, as you said. I always get frustrated when I'm watching a team go through the draft, whether it's NFL or NBA or whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, the plan is to, like, Daryl Morey talks about this a lot, has talked about this a lot, with the way he made acquired players for his various teams with the Rockets or the Sixers. Get the talent, and I'll sort of figure out the rest. I don't personally love that theory. I mean, it depends on where you're talking about picking a guy. I don't love that because it seems like you can walk yourself into trouble. And maybe that's what happened with William Jackson, for example, ignoring that he maybe wasn't going to be a good fit for what they did, but they took the guy who was the best corner on the board. So that makes me a little bit nervous to that they wouldn't have already. I mean, even if they're not going to tell us that they don't have a, like, yeah, this is what we're actually going to do. We're actually going to do this. Rather than saying, well, by August, we'll figure it out. That's my concern from the outside.
Yeah, I think that's a totally reasonable concern and criticism. But I will say, like, having been on teams, like, that's something that's very, very common, right? It's common with the O-line. It's common with the secondary. It's common with the linebackers and defensive line. Like, you just don't know how guys are going to work together till they start working together. And, like, you can have an assertion. Like, right now, I would probably, if I'm Ron, and I'm obviously not, but if I'm Ron, I'm saying Forbes is going to start outside. Benjamin St. Juice is going to start outside. Kendall's probably going to bump inside to the nickel spot, but we also have a nice competition there in terms of pieces and youth that can fill that out. I don't think you have to do that is what I'm saying. Like, let's say Kendall Fuller comes out, he's lost 5 pounds. He looks amazing in training camp. Then obviously you have to reassess. And that's like part of the thing. You can go in with an assumption about what to do. I think it's very telling that every single person nationally and locally thought they were going to draft a corner and offensive lineman. It was a need for this team. It's an area where you can elevate this roster. And so to me, it's like they drafted the best corner on their board. Great. Good for them. And now this is the part where you have to kind of see how the chairs sit, right? And it's a little bit different than William Jackson III, in my opinion, because Forbes is a much better – he has a much better history of fitting in a defense like this.
Right.
You know, obviously he has a – you know, there's the man thing with William Jackson III. Forbes played a lot of zone, a lot of quarters, a lot of cover three, a lot of what they're going to do here. Now, it's not exactly the same, but you can tell that he's going to fit well with what they do here. And, you know, they mentioned the testing that they put him through. They wanted to make sure that he understood kind of spatially route concepts, how to adjust, how to anticipate stuff. And that test supports that. His film supports that. So I think this fit is going to be much, much better. And it's going to, and so now it's just about saying who are the best 5-6 guys to play in this back end. And that's why you have training camp. That's why you have OTAs to help kind of flesh out this evaluation. I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily.
Okay. Fair enough. Speaking of the secondary. So in the second round, they go back to that group again with Quan Martin, the safety / nickelback from Illinois. By the way, I keep saying, I mean, not that the term nickelback is unusual, but like, because this guy, this is kind of what his position is, I keep saying that, and obviously I just keep thinking of the band. Even my laptop adjusted, I had the N lowercase and adjusted it to a capital. I'm like, oh god, this is I'm gonna have to get past this. When we talk about Eye of the Beholder, this is the pick above all the other ones Washington made. Clearly, they went outside the box of what the consensus is. They pick him at 47. Here's where the analysts projected him. Again, just their opinions. Dane Brugler, 81. Jeremiah, 72. Kuiper, 67. McShay, 72. PFF, 94. Again, it's one thing to say, well, you picked the guy 10, 15 picks too early when you don't have another pick in between. But this one... you know, they picked the, you know, I don't know if he would have been there at 97, maybe not, probably not, but they definitely took him earlier than everybody else thought. That said, he had the best vertical leap at the combine of any player, 44 inches, a really good athlete. You know, a guy who, you know, they think can play that nickel spot, and maybe he's ultimately the fifth defensive back more often than not. What's your evaluation of Quan Martin?
I mean, that's a little bit surprising to me that they had him so low, because when Washington was picking, he was one of three guys that I would have selected with the pick, honestly.
Okay.
You know, like he, like when you turn on the film, he needs a guy that I think is not like overly sexy. Like I think Antonio Johnson from Texas A&M was kind of everyone's darling for a while at that kind of Buffalo nickel overhang player. But what I will say is that, like, you know, in talking with the defensive back coach here, you know, a couple of weeks ago, is one of the things they value is position flexibility in the back end. And Anthony Johnson is an overhang Buffalo nickel. He's not going to do anything else, right? Sidney Brown from Illinois, who a guy who I absolutely loved. I loved his film. He's only kind of a Buffalo nickel box player, right? With limited upside as a post player, right? And so you go down the list and you say, you know, what's the guy's name? Brian Branch out of Alabama. A lot of people thought he couldn't play in the post. And so if you're just drafting box players and position flexibility is important to you, which it is for this team, then Jartavius Martin, Quan, is the best pick at the spot, I think. Because when you watch the film, he plays Buffalo nickel, he plays regular nickel, he plays over the slot, he plays in the post, he plays in the split safety, and there's a couple games where he's actually playing outside corner. And so you see the physicality when he's in the box as the Buffalo nickel, you see the movement skills when he's in the nickel, like the true nickel, kind of over the slot, kind of covering a receiver. You saw that kind of extra competitiveness playing outside, and you get a football player who is dynamic in all ranges. So I'm a little bit surprised, and I do think this is one of the things with the pre-draft process specifically that gets a little away from you. You know, like, he's not overly tall, he's not overly heavy. He plays in a system that obviously those defensive backs there are very, very good. But I think that, you know, nationally, it's probably easy to overlook him. Like, I didn't watch him until 5 days out from the draft. And I just was like, I remember watching his film being like, why aren't more people talking about him, especially in this safety class? Like, when you watch all these safeties, it's like a bad group of safeties.
Right.
And he was definitively, I would say, the best one, like the most consistent one, the most diverse one. And, you know, like Antonio Johnson, I thought missed too many tackles. I thought he was kind of sluggish in space. I thought he had a hard time covering true slot receivers. Like, he can cover a tight end, but can he cover a true slot? And I kind of came to the question, like, I don't think he can. So I don't want him to do that on my team, right? And then I come to Quan Martin, and I'm like, this guy can literally do everything. And he's a physical tackler. He can take on guards. He can take on tight ends. He can mix it up. And so to me, there wasn't a lot to be like, I don't like him. I think the size is maybe a little bit of a concern. You know, he's not the biggest guy in the world. He's like 190 pounds. He's 5'11". But I think he's a fantastic football player. He's very instinctive. Apparently his interview process went great, you know, in terms of just high character guy, leader in an NFL defense with Lovie Smith, who recruited him to Illinois, like, holy cow. And so to me, like, the fact that this was even like a, even remotely debated after watching him, I'm a little surprised about, because his film's awesome, you know? And like you mentioned, the combine stuff was great too. So I don't really totally get it, but again, you know, in this draft, especially, beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Okay. Well, that's good. It's good to hear. And you're right. And again, the safety class, when I was doing my mock drafts, even though I only make public the first round, I do two rounds just to have fun. To help them get a better feel for where the strengths and weaknesses are. And I think I maybe only had like Brian Branch in the first two rounds. Typically there maybe one other guy that was like, so yeah, maybe some guys, like you're saying, like Martin, were being, overlooked. Everybody asks you about how you're going to use the three corners. Well, maybe, I don't know if this is going to be original, but let's try this. They use three safeties a lot over the last couple of years. So let's just say that that's one of the looks they're going with Martin, presumably Cam Curl and Derek Forrest out there, knowing those other two guys really well. And now Martin, how would that look? Like, what would you be using those three guys at in the same time, especially since Curl and Forrest also have some, you know, position flexibility?
Yeah, I think Curl Forrest have some position flex. I think Percy Butler has position flex. I think what this pick does is it allows you to kind of get your best four, best arrangement on the field. You know, I do think he can play nickel, and he can play a true nickel. And like, what I mean by that is, like, nickel is one of the hardest positions in the NFL because you have to cover and you have to tackle. You have to fit runs, and you also have to fit in zone coverage as you drop out. It's very, very challenging. And so he's got that skill set, right? And I think he can do it at the NFL level. It'll be interesting to see, right? You know, where Percy Butler is probably more of a post safety. And I think DeForest, while he had a really good year last year, is probably more of a Buffalo nickel type player, right? Meaning he's going to play on first and second down in the box. And I do think there was a thought process to limit the amount of contacts Cam Curl is getting over the course of a season. Because even though he's a big guy, like playing in the box with the big boys wears on you a little bit. And I do think when you look at Forrest's build, it's a little bit more conducive to that. And, you know, I talked to the safety coach, this was, you know, almost 2 years ago now, but they said he had a hard time kind of feeling out that Buffalo nickel roll because everything happens so quickly. Maybe you feel now after 2 years in the defense that he can figure it out. So I don't know. I think all those things are, so basically what I'm saying is, like, having Quan allows you to kind of say, where do these outstanding football players fit best in the context of this defense? Because I do think I would like probably Percy Butler and Cam Curl to be the post safeties. And then I would like Quan to probably be the nickel. And I'd like Forrest to be the Buffalo nickel. Just right now, day one, I haven't, you know, obviously they have to kind of practice at those spots and fill them out. But I think that leads to a pretty dynamic group. And like Forrest next to Jamin in the box and that Cinco front, I think is a pretty compelling bunch of athletes on the field. And that's something that this pick allows you to do. And let's say, you know, Percy is better at the nickel and Quan's better at the safety because of the position flex that he showed in college, you can do that. And I think that ultimately that's why I like the pick so much. It's because he's a good football player in his own right, but his addition to the group now will allow you to elevate those other pieces if utilized correctly.
All right, let me ask you this. You're a guy that does some training. You help some athletes do some get ready for whatever they're trying to accomplish.
Sure.
I don't need a trainer this minute, although I legitimately do. I need a therapist. I need a football therapist. Help me out here. I think I'm being triggered, and I just used the term myself a few minutes ago. I'm being triggered now by the term position flexibility.
Yes.
I'm sick and tired of talking about this. Now, so here's my question. I totally get it. You need to have guys who can do different things, but it feels like it is prioritized almost to the degree over just like talent. Like, I get a guy who can play. We're going to talk about the offensive lineman here. We're going to get a can this guy play guard? Yes. Cool. Did he do anything else? No. Who gives a crap? Can he start?
Yeah.
Same thing maybe with David. So tell me, am I being overly sensitive? Sounds like you don't think maybe I am.
No, I agree. I think in this defense with the secondary, the way they utilize those guys, I think the position flex is like a, unless you're playing outside corner, if you're one of those in the hashes players, so safety, strong safety, nickel, Buffalo nickel, you need to be able to play all spots. So sure. I think there it's a little bit more of a relevant term. And I think especially with this pick, because of the guys you already have, I think that adds a ton of value. Now with the offensive line specifically, I think position flex is important. I do. I think it's important. But at some point, I want a guy on this roster who has a tackle skill set, who looks and measures and runs and moves like a tackle. And that and the position flexibility of that becomes a little bit less important to me. Obviously, that's not how they feel. And so I'm going to defer to them because they're building this team. But I do think on the offensive line specifically, one of the issues with position flex is that you end up with a bunch of guys who are guards. Like, that's ultimately when you talk to people around the league about offensive tackles, like let's say Cosme, for example. I remember, you know, I was talking to my O-line buddies and they're like, I think he can play tackle, but I think he's going to be an excellent guard. Right. And then Chris Paul, guard. Sadiq Charles, guard. And it's under the guise of position flex, but it's much harder to find the size and length to play tackle in the NFL. And that's one of the reasons why I get a little bit frustrated, because I'm like, at some point you need a guy who looks like Charles Leno, you know, who's going to have 34 and a half inch arms. He's got 6'5", 6'6", and he's 325 pounds. Like, you know, you need guys like that on your team because of the length and the speed and the space that they have to negotiate. And we're going to talk about those picks in a second, but I do think that's something that, that again kind of gets me going a little bit. Is my one, if I have one ilk of frustration, it's that. But I also think that the players that they did select are interesting in terms of their projection to some of those spots. So I'm not mad. I just, like, that's one thing that kind of digs at me a little bit, you know, because of, again, I have my own biases. I have my own, you know, big board. Like, you can see that when I put that out. So for me, it's, yes, I think you need position flex. It's important. But also, I need guys. There's a reason you specialize. There's a reason that there's cutoffs for length and speed and weight for certain positions. You know, I don't want you know, a 7 foot guy playing receiver because they don't have the change of direction ability, right? Like there's just things that happen and are conducive to that thing. So yeah, that's my 2 cents on that.
All right, well, good. I feel better now. I'm gonna lay off the Prozac for today at least. All right, let me ask you this. I'm gonna with your permission, I'm gonna sort of skip past Stromberg, the third round pick, only because for this year's purposes, I think it's pretty apparent he's like the third string center, but the long term answer. Probably, unless you want to tell me you think he can compete to start with Gates and Larson.
I think he can compete to start. He was okay. He was my fourth rated center and a guy that I thought was very close to being in that, like, you know, Tippmann, Schultz, Whipler kind of category in terms of ability to come in and play right away. You know, Ron said he thinks he can play guard. I don't know if I totally agree with that. He seems like he's a little bit too tight in the hips to be a true guard. But I think he's a good football player, and I think he could potentially be the starter week one, which is why I like the pick. I really like him as a player. You know, in terms of value, I'm not a big guy in drafting centers. I'm like, if you're going to draft a center, draft a guard and teach him how to play center, I think that's the way I would go. And I played on a whole bunch of teams where that's what they did. But he's an excellent football player. His tape's awesome. I think he's a good enough athlete and he's big. I think, you know, having a big center is something that they value, and he definitely fits the bill there. So.
Yeah. So he went 97, and looking at the consensus of the five groups I was mentioning, two of them didn't have him in their list, which not everybody's list went out the, you know, all the way to right. 300, but Dane Brugler had him 110, another two or 124, 125. So, you know, 97, a tick higher,
That's the other thing I wanted to bring up too. Like, you know, I can't speak to the board here, but I talked to some of my other friends around the league, and when you actually get the lists, and they won't give you the exact list, but when they kind of say, when you bring up names to them, and they're like, oh, this guy's off our board, this guy's off our board, this guy's off our board. You got to realize it's not like five people off the board. It's like probably closer to 50.
Right.
So, you know, he's going to, a guy who's got excellent character, you know, played in a big conference, all those different things for the NFL is going to be higher than he is for the media, just based on people who are taken off the board.
Yeah, fair enough. So let's go to the fourth round pick, Braden Daniels.
Yeah,
very much this position flex scenario. Played tackle, played guard, played all over the place at Utah. It, you know, Ron said that when they went into the draft, they felt they had covered most of their areas pretty well in free agency, using the analogy that when they went shopping, they weren't doing so hungry, that they were already, you know, feeling good. Okay, that said, I still feel if I'm looking at the starting lineup for both sides of the ball, the one position I do not have a clue is who's starting, who even is a likely starter, is left guard.
Sure.
Because he's talking about a Chris Paul, Sadiq Charles competition. He said this at the owners meeting. He forgot to mention Andrew Norwell, which I'll just take as a sign that Andrew Norwell may not be long for this world here. But Andrew Norwell is still here as well. Now they draft Braden Daniels, who feels like, to the position flex comments, feels more guardy than tackly. I don't know what they're going to do. This is going to be a battle to watch in camp, but what do you think about Daniels, and does he fit into this left guard conundrum?
So I thought so, but then Ron in his presser kind of said he thinks he's going to play more tackle, and he's a really interesting evaluation, Braden Daniels. I think he's a guy that, he's got this tremendous athleticism, tremendous explosion in his hips and his hands. He's a little undersized. He's 6'4". I think he's 295, kind of a smaller tackle guy. But, you know, when I first watched him, he's one of the first guys I watched. I thought immediately guard. He has to play guard. And then I talked to some of my NFL buddies, and they're like, you know, I don't think he makes it unless he's a center. And then, you know, in Ron's presser, he was like, you know, Travell came out and said, if we clean up some of his footwork stuff, I think he can play tackle. And I about had a conniption. I was like, I don't know if I agree with that. And he's the guy that I've watched about seven games of, and I've come around to that idea a little bit. And the reason I'm going to say that is because when you watch him, every couple of plays, he'll flash something that is truly elite at the position, from a footwork standpoint, from a speed standpoint, from a power standpoint. I think the problem is that it's not overly consistent. You know what I'm saying? It's like he's striking out. He hits a lot. He hits home runs, but he's also striking out a lot. And I think I see what Travell is talking about. And I've talked to Travell a couple times. I think he's a very bright dude. I think he's a great coach. And he's a guy that, you know, I was online the other day, and I saw a crazy comp to him between Braden Daniels and Trent Williams. And on the surface, that seems crazy,
right?
Obviously, it seems crazy. But when you see those flashes from him, it does look like that. Now, there's a reason he's a fourth round pick with all of this athletic undertone. He's a little undersized, right? He's a little inconsistent, but he does have something, I say, special athletically that makes me think it's possible that he plays tackle. Now, I've talked to all my buddies, you know, that would be an outlier kind of statement, but it is, there is a realm of possibility where that happens. I think it's also important to remember he doesn't have ideal length. He's got 33-inch arms, but his footwork is raw, but his foot speed and dexterity is very, very high, and those guys usually can play tackle in the NFL. So he's a really interesting prospect from the athletic upside perspective. But yeah, I think that's a really interesting statement by Ron that they think he's in the mix for the tackle competition.
Okay. So that said, you don't have to give me a long answer on this one if you don't want, but like the left guard week one, is it going to be Chris Paul, Sadiq Charles, is Andrew Norwell still here, or are they going out and signing somebody in this secondary free agent market?
Yeah, I mean, I think Nick Gates kind of throws his hat there too. I don't think they want to do that, but he has played left guard.
Rivera seemed to indicate he wanted him to be the center.
Right.
I
think that's another reason why the Stromberg pick is kind of interesting, because Stromberg has played only center for the last 2 years of his career. He played a little bit of guard as a freshman, but only played center the last 2 years there at Arkansas. So to me, he's a center only in my mind. I know Ron said he's got position flex. Again, I don't know if I totally agree with that, but you know, I've been wrong before. So I guess to me, it's Chris Paul or Sadiq. And I think when you look at Sadiq, he's again one of those guys that coming out of LSU was incredibly athletic, incredibly high upside, but just has never turned the corner, right? And I think that's one of the reasons fans and analysts have kind of been like, man, like they need to do something different at that position, because you can't trust them. And then you've got Chris Paul again, who's played one game in the NFL.
Yep.
And I think has upside, to be sure, very high upside, but he's a seventh round pick. And there's the reason he's a seventh round pick is because he was crazy inconsistent at Tulsa, and he still is figuring out some kind of nuances of the game. And I know he's been able to lock up John Allen in pass pro because he's an extremely powerful, strong man, but there is more to football than that. And so I think there's a lot of questions at the position. And, you know, Norwell, you know, I got to say this for my guy Norwell, everyone wants to crush him, but I think he was a top 40 guard in the NFL, which is not great, but not terrible. And you can live with that if you do for another year, I think. I know fans won't love that, but I do think Eric Bieniemy, as the play caller, helps insulate a lot of the deficiencies with players. And I think he would understand how to speak to Noel a little bit more acutely than, you know, Matt Scow and Turner did in terms of the plays that we're asking him to run. So, you know, while that seems insane, I definitely think that's a possibility. So, you know, nothing that feels great there. You got two upside players and a guy, you know, exactly who he is. So I think that'll be really interesting to watch. And I think they're banking on a lot of development from two guys. One guy I think is more likely. I think Chris Paul's more likely to develop, you know, than Sadiq, because Sadiq's been here for, what is that?
He got here in 2020.
4 years now. And he's kind of, kind of three years. So he's kind of the same guy he was then. But, you know, maybe this is the year. And, you know, they say offensive linemen hit their developmental year after year three. So here we go, Sadiq. You know, let's make it happen. Because I do think he does have tremendous upside. Like when he played against Philly in the COVID year, dominant against Fletcher Cox. But you just don't see it with enough regularity to say, I feel really good about it.
Right. And I'm with you on Norwell. Like, look, because the start of the year last year went the way that it did, everybody was getting crushed on the offensive line. He did throughout. And if I'm being super honest from a coverage perspective, I don't think anybody goes out of their way to say this guy stinks as like a personal agenda. But because Norwell basically did not talk to us the whole year, more or less, there's no positive mentions either.
Right.
And he wasn't doing a lot. Like nobody, there's no feel good story about here's why Andrew Norwell's a really fun guy in the locker room or anything like that.
Right.
There's nothing on that to help. But I do wonder, you know, they have some other options. Chase Rouhier is a likely cap casualty thing, and maybe some others. But I'm a little more wondering about Norwell. I said this in the media room the other day as well, that, you know, now that we see the roster, I don't know, maybe he stays, because it's not like they have anybody who's like a true option, a definitive option there.
Yeah.
Let's skip to some of these other guys and I'll get you out of here. I'm going to owe you lunch at this point already, because I'm already keeping you too long, which is fine and reasonable. They draft two edge rushers, KJ Henry from Clemson and Andre Jones from Louisiana. I don't know if you view Jones as a edge or a linebacker. You can explain that in a second, but they're both are going to be two guys coming off the edge. That seemed a position for them to take because, well, one, in more recent development, Shaka Tony is suspended for the year because of a gambling for over gambling. And then the top five defensive ends are all free agents after this year. So they needed something, even just from a purely long-term perspective. What's your initial view of these two guys, with Henry being the more obvious, interesting one?
Yeah, KJ Henry is just like a good football player. You know, he played at Clemson. He has some pass rush upside, nothing elite, but physical against the run, uses his hands well. You know, maybe not the greatest, longest athlete in the whole world, but I think he's a good football player. And I think, you know, he kind of gets lost in the shuffle there, lost in the sauce, because Brian Bresee and Miles Murphy get all the headlines there, but very, very solid football player. You know, I kind of thought they might go the edge rusher from Georgia, who was a little bit more athletic profile-y. You know, he ran a 4.4, he had 34-inch arms. But what I do understand is that KJ Henry's like a two-time team captain, been pretty fantastic in terms of his leadership role, and obviously that's something that they've prioritized for this draft class. So I think he's going to fit in nicely. He's going to be a good pro. Like, I mean, there's, you know, in terms of just like a vanilla safe pick, a guy that's going to play good football for you and be a good leader, like, I think I love that as a fifth round pick, you know, and I think he's a guy that can grow into, you know, maybe being like a rotational starter at some point in his career. So to get that in the fifth round is pretty special. And then Andre Jones,
by the way, Mel Kiper had him as his, or Daniel Jeremiah, one of them had them as his number 77 prospect overall. So if we're talking about value, this is one where they may have gotten some good value based on the public boards.
By the consensus in public boards, I kind of feels like people just forgot about him, honestly, like, because he's a really good football player. So I think one of the things that's tough is he's kind of a funny size. He's like 6'4", 6'5", but like 250. So is he a true end or is he a true stand-up linebacker? Like, it's hard, but I think he's a good football player. Andre Jones is actually really interesting to me because when you look at his athletic profile, it looks like he's got the same profile as like elite edge rushers, right? He's 6'5", 250. He's got 34.5-inch arms, which are very long arms for his frame. He's a 98th percentile in terms of wingspan, which is crazy. His 10 was like the top percentile, one of the top percentiles for the position. So even though his production maybe wasn't great, level of competition wasn't great, he's 25 years old. He's got this kind of analytics profile to say he can develop into something more, which is something that I actually really like about the pick, because, you know, they drafted James Bradley King, they drafted Shaka Tony, guys with this pass rush upside, but they didn't have the length, they didn't have the burst that projected well to the next level. And I think they've been fine kind of backup players, but I don't think they're going to be anything more than that. I think this guy, Andre, does because of the athletic profile, can project to something more as a pass rusher, which I think is what you want to do with that seventh round pick. They did it last year with Chris Paul, and I think Christian Holmes, like guys who athletically fit this bill and from a measurement standpoint. So I think he's a guy that I think is going to be really, really interesting. You know, he does drop a little bit in that defense, but I think he's a little too stiff to be a true stand-up linebacker. I think he's going to be an edge, and, you know, I think he can play linebacker in certain situations, but definitely, like, you want him rushing the passer. I think is ultimately what the conclusion I come to after watching him, and we'll see what they do with him in training camp. You know, Ron kind of said cryptically that they have a role for him in the defense. What does that role look like? I don't know. Because he does a good job. He has a good feel in kind of spot drop zones, but I don't know if you want him necessarily majoring in that. Like, if he were to take on blocks, I mentioned the length, he does a good job of that when he's in his 2-point at the line of scrimmage. So can he do it? Maybe, but I think the thing he's going to impact right away is as an edge rusher, just based on the film.
All right. The player they took in between the two edge rushers, Kentucky running back Chris Rodriguez. Here's what's interesting to me. Last year, when Brian Robinson missed the first four games and they did not run the ball much at all, especially with the interior type running, Rivera later in the year, maybe when the season ended, said that obviously Robinson's situation was incredibly unfortunate and unforeseen, but that took away that kind of running. And my view was that's an excuse, because you still had Jonathan Williams there. You could still do it. So just do it. Or if that's the case, then you better this offseason get somebody, the third running back, not a J.D. McKissick style back, get a Brian Robinson type interior runner so you can avoid this, especially when you're telling everybody you want to be a run heavy team or whatever. It feels like Chris Rodriguez is that situation based on watching the film. Didn't catch many passes at all at Kentucky. What do you think of whatever I just said? And what do you think of the player?
Yeah, I mean, he's an excellent football player. I mean, he's one of my favorite backs in the class. You know, I think they said they had a third round grade on him. That might be a little high for me, but I think I definitely saw him as a very good football player. He runs hard. He kind of explodes on contact, very similar to like Isaiah Pacheco, you know, like from Kansas City. Like you hit him and it's like his body comes alive. Like he's been like hit with like an electric jolt, and he just runs hard. He's got good vision. He's got nice quick feet for a guy who's almost 230 pounds. He catches the football well. I think like it's not like he's fighting the ball. Like he caught some screens and some checkdowns and did a good job with that. Very similar to Brian Robinson last year. I think a lot of people undervalued his ability to catch a football. I think Chris Rodriguez falls in that same category. And then also, I think he's very good in pass protection. He's got a good feel for that. He's got a good feel for like how to bring his hips and explode into the rusher, keep the width and depth of the pocket for the quarterback. So I really like him. And I think one of my favorite kind of sequences was when he was playing against Mississippi State. He comes out and they're running like, I forget exactly what it was, maybe like an inside zone. He's getting dragged down by this linebacker and he still is able to deliver this kind of concussive blow on the safety. The two plays later, he's in the hole, the linebacker misses him, and he's one-on-one with the safety, and the safety takes a creative angle. He makes a miss, and then he runs for 50 yards. He doesn't score a touchdown, but his short area burst is very, very high, very similar to Isaiah Pacheco. And it, to me, it's kind of an interesting thing. It's something that I've always toyed with as like kind of a thought experience. Everyone says, oh, I want a big back and a small back to kind of complement each other. But what if you just said, hey, we're just going to throw haymakers, and we got two big bodies, and we're just going to throw those dudes into the teeth of your defense 30 times a game. Like that is a daunting proposition in my perspective. Yeah. You know, so it's going to be really interesting. You know, they did sign that gentleman from UCLA who's kind of their returner, running back, receiver type guy. So maybe he fills in that role. I also think Antonio Gibson will be kind of more in a pass catching capacity. And so like they have three running backs who weigh over 225 pounds and are just big, stocky guys. So that's a scary thing for defenses, I think. So in terms of establishing an identity as a running team, I think that pick speaks volumes about who and what they want to be doing.
All right. So because they doubled up on some of these positions, they did not draft and they traded an extra pick to get to move up for KJ Henry. They did not draft another quarterback. They didn't draft a tight end. They didn't draft a linebacker. I don't think some of that was tight end. I didn't think they would, but the other two, maybe. Does that any of that bother you? I mean, you can't do everything in every draft. Does any of that bother you? And they are adding undrafted free agents, so they will likely have some new pieces in those spots. But does that bother you at all that they didn't address those spots in the draft?
Quarterback, no, not really. I think this was kind of a down year for kind of the second wave of quarterback. And if they don't fault you, they don't fault you. I'm not going to like make a reach, especially when we've kind of established we really like our situation now. I think the linebacker thing is slightly concerning, but I think it's also important for people to understand that like it was a bad linebacker class. So outside of like three guys, I probably wasn't getting too fired up about any of them. And I'd say five guys. So there was obviously Jack Campbell, who I thought was going to be there at 47. And I thought that could have been the pick for them at 47. But obviously he goes 18 to Detroit. Henley was another guy. Drew Sanders, I thought was an interesting guy, but wasn't sure about the fit. And then there were the kid from Texas, Overshown, and the kid from Tulsa, or Tulane, Williams, who I thought really fit their kind of mold for linebacker. But those guys even went earlier than I thought. I think they went at the bottom of the third.
Yeah.
So kind of unexpected in terms of the range that they went. And so when you kind of look at the rest of the board, it's like, well, I guess we're not picking a linebacker, because I'm not really high on anybody else. I mean, Trenton Simpson, I think he even went in the third round. So a little bit surprising with those guys going so high, because I thought, man, there's going to be a dude there, kind of a developmental guy in the fifth, sixth, seventh round that you feel good about. But, you know, when you look at the players that they did get in those ranges, like KJ Henry, I think adds more value to your roster. Chris Rodriguez, I think, is an excellent find. And Andre Jones kind of being in the tail end there, I think has got a really, really nice upside despite being 25 years old. And, you know, we talked about Braden Daniels a lot. I don't want to exclude him. I think he has a tremendously high ceiling, but also a very low floor. So it'll be interesting to see where he kind of fleshes out and what where he's able to get to in terms of his ability.
Last one for you. You mentioned him tangentially here. They have not officially announced their undrafted free agent signings. And I've reported a bunch of them. You can see them on Twitter. But this is a wild, wild west world out there. So until they're signed, we'll see. If I'm saying this right, Kazmir Allen, as you described, the gentleman from UCLA. Yeah. Dude runs faster than the wind. Like he's an Olympic speed level runner type guy. I've seen him. Running back, receiver, what have you, but also a returner. I kept thinking they're going to draft a receiver or a running, someone like that. It would be for the return position in mind. I know Dax Milne was not everybody's favorite guy. He was completely solid. He didn't have any muffs, but no real explosive plays either. What do you think of this guy, since you're Mr. UCLA, to whatever degree you were aware of what he was able to do? And does that, was that a something you thought they should look at as well, getting perhaps another return option?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think, I watched all of his key plays last night after I saw him on your Twitter. So shout out to Ben Standing for bringing that to my attention. But he's a guy that has a lot of explosion. He kind of reminds me of I forget the guy's name, but the Mamba that played at Oregon for a couple years, the little shifty running back receiver type guy. He kind of fills that role for them, catches the ball okay, definitely not like a full-time receiver, but as a running back he just finds explosive plays. I think if you watch the Arizona State game, he had four runs maybe of over 60 yards, like it was insane to watch in space making people miss. Thought he had, but his kind of 10 short area quickness is off the chart. So I think that's a really nice find. I think that's a good fit. I think he can fit a role on offense potentially, which is something you want from your returner. Now it's getting interesting about whether he does that. He can produce at the NFL level and that speed and quickness shows up. Because I think he ran like a 4.4 or something like that. So, maybe not the fastest dude. Everyone thought he was going to run a 4.2 or 4.3. So a little bit slower than people thought, but excellent athlete.
There you go. All right, look, to go full Howard Stern here, Logan, you've said it all because I've asked you 800 questions. Go follow Logan on Twitter, Logan_Paulson.
No, Instagram guy. I don't have
Twitter. Oh, Instagram. You mentioned Twitter. That's why I was like, I think.
Sorry, that's on me. That's on me.
No. Well, that's on me, but I was like, wait, Logan looked at Twitter. What's going on here? Logan_Paulson82 on Instagram for, of course, all his breakdowns and film work. And everything else. And of course, Logan does the Take Command podcast with Craig Hoffman. And he's literally on every show in town because everybody wants his insight on what's going on. And I'm glad I got him in here before the crush came. Anything else for you we need to know about?
Just make sure you're checking out the Commanders YouTube page and commanders.com for more team related content. They're doing a good job over there on the shows that I'm on. So yeah, that's the only other thing.
You demand, Logan. We'll talk soon. Thanks for the insight.
Thanks, man. Appreciate having me on.
All right. Big thanks to Logan Paulson for his time. Thanks to everyone here for checking out the podcast. You guys rule. What can I tell you? I look forward to chatting more in the days ahead. But for now, I'm going to go eat dinner and watch some NBA playoffs. So until next time, see ya.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.